This hour was brought to you by Alpine Credits. Do you own your home and need a loan? Alpine Credits can help. Visit alpinecredits.ca to learn more.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Hayes.
We've been doing this one for a year, and we're still stepping over each other to start segments. Go ahead. Now you've thrown me off. What do you have?
I just think it's a new hour, a fresh hour. Why not head back down to Quail Hollow and check in on our man, Harry Higgs from the rough?
Harry Higgs playing 18, which again is the most difficult hole on the golf course.
What are we trying?
And from where? He's right on that cut line at 1-0. Oh, that hit the top of the tent.
What was he thinking with that club?
You know what? In breaking down the tape, like, they're already concerned before he's swinging. They're like, oh, what's going on here?
Oh, he follows seen it a million times.
Oh, I mean, yeah.
If you're in a situation like that, you're going to put yourself
in trouble. Six iron layup in a pitching wedge.
Yeah, it was not in a good spot. We'll play that a bunch this afternoon. I got to get in some reads here. I know you guys are super horny on a Friday afternoon, but let me get in a couple reads here. Mail it in Friday on Overdrive, brought to you by our friends at Coors Light, Mountain Cold Refreshment, Made to Chill. Brian Azio, Doug, Jeff O'Neill, Jamie Noodles, McClendon. Go ahead, Noodles, with any question you have about golf, Nick Faldo, whatever.
I mean, my question was, I was just laying it out there that in breaking down the tape, I thought that was originally with our mics open, you guys laughing. They're laughing in, you know, wherever, in the booth already. Like, they're kind of chuckling as they're talking about it. Like, oh, hold on a second here. This guy's actually doing this. Like, if you play it again, like, I thought that was us kind of chuckling. That's Faldo. Who's the
I don't know who's calling him. I'm not sure who
Harry Higgs playing 18, which, again, is the most difficult hole on the golf course.
What are we trying?
And from where? He's right on that cut line at 1-0. Oh, that hit the top of the tent.
I know who that is. I know that voice. He's a former NC State basketball player, and he commentates on golf. I know his face. Tall, slender dude. I just don't know his name.
But they're laughing already. That's my point. It's like
you don't see a tour player hit that shot ever, man. Like, that is
crazy.
That's a zillion miles offline.
Yeah, no, it wasn't good for Harry. And I guess he's still out there on the course, so we'll track if he makes the cut, but it's not looking so good for Harry Higgs, and he's gotta start winning. You know, he's gotta stay in FedEx Cup contention. He's gotta start qualifying for majors, and he just hasn't been able to put anything together. He's one of our favorites. We had him on, 7-8 months ago now, I guess? We had Harry Higgs on, something
like
that.
Dude, you know how hard it is to keep your card on that tour with how good those dudes are? Like, he had that good little run, was it last year or the year? I don't even remember the way time goes now. But he got his card, and you'll just see guys, like, 3 years later, the next year you'll see him back on the Corn Ferry. It's like, it's so difficult to stay on that tour.
Terry Gannon is his name.
Yeah.
That's the guy. Terry Gannon.
Jerry Gannon.
Jerry Gannon is in the booth there calling it with Faldo.
That's great.
So we'll play that again a couple times this afternoon. We've got Duffy in about an hour. We've got Jeff Blum coming up down in Houston. And I guess George Springer is down there speaking with the media. And I'm sure people in Houston want to talk to him, right? Like, this is a homecoming for him, and he's not even playing. But I guess today he said he's not going to rush his return. And he's got to do what he's got to do to make sure he gets things right. You know, I'm not sure how to interpret that. I can't put a timeline on this guy now, because he missed the first 23 games of the year, I believe it was. Came back for 2.5 games, and now I kind of get the impression like we're almost back at square one.
Yeah, and it seems like this one's going to be a month. I know they said the 10-day or whatever, and Ross came out and said, it could be longer, but I'm not 100% sure. I got to check on the info. But it sounds like it could be, like, who knows, man? It could be a month.
It could be. And Joe Panik went on the IL today, so Rowdy Tellez has been called back up. He's going to be activated, and he'll be in the lineup tonight. I don't know if he's going to actually play, but he's going to be a part of the program for the Jays moving forward. And Alejandro Kirk is out for at least a month as well. So Kirk is out long term. I think Springer is going to be out for quite some time. They've moved Merriweather to the 60-day IL. I mean, he's constantly injured. He can never get his career on the right path. He's got such great stuff, but I don't think you can have faith in him and trust that he's going to give you enough innings And, you know, at least Ryu went yesterday. It didn't go so well, but he came back off the IL on time, which I guess is a positive considering the way things can work with this team. So you got him back in the rotation, and you're in Houston. You got 2-4 at Oakland. It started poorly. It wasn't going so great at times, but you got two wins on the road. That's all good. And you're in Houston tonight, Ross Stripling on the mound, and the Jays are just hovering around 500.
Yeah, you know, they're just hanging around there.
Which I think all things considered is okay. You know, like considering the injuries they've had, the pitching that they have, for them to be around 500, I'll take that right now. And Vladdy continues to put up monster numbers. Like I just see boards come up all the time throughout baseball with, you know, Trout and Tatis Jr. and Ohtani hit his 10th last night. And almost every single impressive stat board includes Vladdy Guerrero Jr. Like, regardless of what it is, who he's up against, what the ballpark is, what the count is, runners in scoring position, slugging percentage, on base, everything. He's like top five, top 10 in every statistical category that matters.
I don't know what the TVs are doing, Hayes, or like the sound is different on different broadcasts, but when Ohtani hits a bomb, like it sounds, it's got a sound to it that's incredible, man.
He turns on it. And yeah, it's pretty significant when he goes off. And he's got 10. He's leading the majors in home runs, or he's tied in the lead with his 10th last night. Joining us now, the Maple Toyota Hotline, here is our hockey analyst, Ray Ferraro. What's up, Ray?
Yeah, not much. Just kind of hanging around.
Teeing it up?
Okay, maybe I played this morning, yeah.
Oh,
God,
Don't say that. Now you're
well,
just...
You're not fine. Let me ask you out there. You live in Vancouver. Do you not think it is outrageous that you're allowed to golf and we can't?
I don't think it's outrageous we're allowed to golf. I think it's outrageous that outdoor activity in Ontario is not a thing. I just don't get it.
Nobody does.
To me, it's like it, from I look. I got grade 12. I'm just a little bit short of a scientist. But from a common sense standpoint, it makes none.
No, they say do outdoor things, but don't golf.
Right, like it's not even. Never mind just the golf, because obviously we love it, and you know maybe we're biased and all that, but. When the thing that I saw, you know, 3 weeks ago or whatever, I just couldn't believe it. Was the picture in one of the publications of the basketball netting chained up, like so you can't go shoot hoops. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, how is that helping the pandemic? The safety of in the pandemic. How is that helping? It's not.
No,
as far as I know,
it's absolutely not. And like, there's another layer to this. Like, we're talking kids and the opportunities that they've really missed out on. Like, how many kids throughout the country, and more so, I guess, here in Ontario, really now, where you can't play soccer, you can't play baseball, right. You can't play basketball, you can't play anything outdoors. Like, you know, it's
so
one
see,
thing
here they can practice, but it's got to be socially distanced, and there's no games. So whatever you think of that, at least they can go to practice and see their buddies and they run around. They got to stay in their own little area, but you're like, at least they can do that.
Yeah, it gives you some sort of hope, like something to look forward to. We're getting out of the house and we got a plan. You know, like
yeah, otherwise, guess what? For all the parents that are exhausted, the kids are tired of us too.
Of course. It's a two-way street. They want to be active. It's natural. They're dying to get outside. The weather's starting to turn. Mm-hmm. I can sense it with my own kids, and they're young. I can only imagine if you had a 12- or 13-year-old kid who was really into sports, and they must just be thinking, what am I supposed to do here, play video games all day? You know, like that.
They can't even – am I right? They can't even go for a bike ride.
Well, it's, honestly, nah, Ray, it's so
–
You can, but it's so tough to actually get a clear answer from anyone here because originally it wasn't. Yeah. Originally it was the cops are going to stop you, and then it was, no, get outside and get some exercise. And we encourage you to get outside and be active, but don't do anything that's actually structured.
Right.
You know, that's not allowed. And
but there, I mean, you know what it comes back to? We've said this before on this show. It's not political. Common sense. Problem is,
right.
is there for the 90% of people, maybe it's a higher number, there is common sense. For the lower number who are dopes, that's the problem. That, you know,
right.
We got people that have written into this show saying you guys are complaining about golf. Well, I live on a golf course, and the golfers that I see aren't, you know, playing by the rules. So, you know, as you guys do it, I'm sure you do it. But the problem is in any layer, in any fashion, there's dopes. And those dopes are the ones who are holding everybody up.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know how close do you guys get to the guys you're playing golf with. But I'd never stand shoulder to shoulder with anybody.
No, of course not. That's the thing.
You know, and I don't ride a cart. I walk. So if they're worried about, oh, you're in the cart and it's too close, then say you got to walk. I don't know. Like, there's got to be something that can be done. I feel badly for everybody that can't just have a – all it is a slice of normalcy that gives you something to look forward to.
That's right. Yep. No, and that's what it is. It's punitive. Like, it's now it's just, all right, we're going to do this, then everyone has to sit at home. And it's like, you know, that just doesn't add up when we've been doing this for 14 months. You know, last year we all got it. This time last year, everyone understood it. Like, it was, we were all panicked. We were all uninformed. We hadn't been through it. Now we have.
Well, I just talked to one of our producers, Hayes, that was down at the U18s. Now they got to come back, of course, and they're going to quarantine and all that stuff. But he said it was nice to be able to walk around and nobody talked about it. Like that, you know, in Texas, of course, it's a little bit different place, but more people are vaccinated. You know, they got operations to vaccinate all over the place. And he said it was just nice to walk around. Like, they went and did their job, and they wore their masks in the truck, but they just went and did their job. They walked around. He went to a AA baseball game. Like, how awesome would that be just to sit there and watch a ball game again?
You're right. They're 3 to 6 months ahead of us, regardless of who you want to lay blame at. That's just the truth. So we just have to grind through from a mental health perspective, from all of that type of stuff, for the next 3 to 6 months to see what's going on down there. And I know there's outlier situations, but I've talked to the same type of people down there in the States that are going out for dinner, that are golfing, that are going on vacations, that are flying to the Kentucky Derby, to doing all these things. They're living their life in the new normal. We're not there yet. Unfortunately,
there's nothing we're going to do about that. That's right. That's the way it goes. But anyway,
if it makes you feel better, yesterday I shot 74 and today I shot 85. So,
not really, but good for you.
As awesome as I played yesterday, I stunk today.
Well, we were trying to get a read on that Leafs-Habs game last night. I mean, there were obviously Matthews hits 40, and the Leafs got off to the start they did, and Primo was struggling, and he gets pulled. The Habs, I felt like it was a bit more of a physical game than the previous ones. I don't know if you saw that. I'm not saying anything vicious. There wasn't horrifying acts of violence last night. But I did think that the Habs were trying to finish checks, and then I thought the Leafs were like, okay, if we're going to play that game, we'll throw our body around a little bit. And I kind of expect that to amplify tomorrow night. I think tomorrow night is kind of a let's get our last lick in because this is where we're going. It's Leafs-Habs more than likely, like 90% chance or whatever it is.
99% is
More or less. I mean, the Leafs are going to finish first, clearly. That's over. And the Habs are probably not going to catch Winnipeg. So – it's going to be Leafs Montreal, and I think it's clear if it's going to happen. If skill is going to determine that, the Leafs might win in four. But I think if you're the Habs, you need goaltending, you need structure, but you need it to get a little bit nasty. And I think that's clearly got to be their game plan as of tomorrow night, and certainly come game one.
Well, I believe when the Canadians are at their best, it's a grindy, troublesome game. Like there's. They want to get out on a rush, like they want a quick strike, but they've got enough guys that are bigger and physical. Their defense is big. Like you're not going to get an easy run away from Montreal, and that's the way that series is going to be. They're going to try to play it, and Toronto's going to try and spread them out a little bit, make them chase them a bit, see if you can get them out of position. And you're right. I mean, from a skill standpoint, it's not a fair fight. And any team, I think, for the most part, just off the top of my head, other than Tampa, they're going to want to play Toronto that same way. You know, like Tampa's got the same amount of skill. They've got incredibly talented forwards and they get, you know, the best defensemen in hockey, and they play a skilled game, but they're the one team maybe that you could look at in that light. The other teams, they're going to want to play the Leafs physically as much as they can. Like, that's going to be the attempt to be the equalizer against them.
Yeah,
I agree.
Yep, I
agree.
I think so. And go ahead, Noodles.
I'm sorry. I guess my curiosity is how they're going to react to that. Like, they play a really skilled puck possession game, but if the ice is more contested, we'll see how they fight through that. You know what I mean? Like, are they still going to be able to do drop passes and curl back? And if you know that every ounce of ice, there's a check being finished. There's a, you know, there's going to be a 50-50 battle. Like, there is going to be a little bit more, I would say, natural clutching and grabbing and all of that type of stuff. That's where guys like Hyman and Simmons and the way that they play Foligno come into the equation. But it's not going to be as free-flowing. Like, that's the one thing. And that's my biggest curiosity for me with Toronto is, can they adapt to that, like, what playoff hockey looks like?
Well, but you know what, Jamie? Like, yesterday, we ran a little highlight pack. I think it was after the second period. But, like, how well-positioned the Leafs were around the ice. And so if you're going to be the target, like, you know, they're going to try and be physical and hit you all the time, you've got to be in the right place so you can move the puck quick. So the puck's a half a stride ahead of the contact all the time. Man, they were, like, they lit up Montreal with their breakouts through the middle of the ice. And that takes away a lot of the a lot of the punishment your D-men have to take. They don't have to be hit. They move it up the middle. There's a little quick pass. There was a couple from Sandin. There was a couple from Brody. Brody, I'm trying to think, he hit Spezza, I think, that led to the Engvall goal. It was like a perfect breakout up the middle, but Spezza was in the right place. One other time it was Tavares. One time it was Marner. And I'm like, man, that's how you kill the physicality. That's how you kill the forecheck. Like, there isn't one when it moves like that. That's got to be their defense, I think.
Yeah, and I think the Leafs might even, you know, beat Montreal to the punch as well. I mean, it's a two-way street. Like, they may muck it up themselves. They're going to play physical themselves. They're capable of that with Foligno, Hyman, Simmons, Thornton's a big body. Like, they've Muzzin, Bogosian, if he's in the lineup. You know, this is not the same old Leafs where you're like, they're just going to get out-muscled. You know, and just beat up, and they have to pray for great goaltending, and hopefully it's a skill game. I think I wouldn't be shocked if the Leafs are thinking we'll set the tone, you know, and Montreal can figure it out as much as Toronto has to figure it out too. It's not like Montreal's loaded with this playoff experience on top of what the Leafs have. I mean, they're in similar spots.
The one thing is their D is big, so they can absorb some, you know, they can absorb punishment in a series. Will Montreal create any offense is a question for me. You know, like, they got, you know, Corey Perry's been a nice story. I think he's 0 goals in 16 or something right now. Kotkaniemi's no goals in 21, no points in 9. Like, they've got some players that haven't really been able to score a lot. I mean, outside of Toffoli and Anderson, it's been, and lately Suzuki again, it's been a struggle for them. So, yeah, physicality can matter, and it can slow the game down and congest the ice. But at the end of the day, Montreal still has to find a way to score. And that doesn't look like it's easily solvable.
Ray, can you put your finger on just the significance of the Matthews and McDavid's potential accomplishments? Like 40 goals and creeping up on 100 points. I mean, it's outrageous.
Well, I mean, I may be off, but it, to me, it's like they're Lemieux and Gretzky of our time. Like, the same, their numbers might not ever be the same, but it's like they're just better than everybody else at what they do. Like, they're, you know, like, I remember playing against those guys, and you're like, oh, they only, you know, Gretz had 3 points tonight. And you're like, oh, I didn't think it was a great night. And then on a great night, he had 5. And then Mario, you'd be like, you know, take the first half of the night off, and then we couldn't get the puck from him in the second half. Like, you know, in the game last night, McDavid misses a penalty shot, and 10 seconds later, they zip it around on the, you know, on the power play, and he's got an assist. That's 3 points, and what's he got, 96 or whatever. Matthews is giggling on the bench when he missed that one. He's like, because, you know, he's confident enough. He knows he's getting more chances. And then, like, I think it was the next shift, and that release, like, Noodles, you know, you've talked about it before, but to me it looks, if you're a goalie, you're guessing at the release all the time. So fast, and it's so deceptive. That thing was past Allen, and I don't know if it was a good goal or bad goal, but, man, it happened in a hurry.
It's a good goal because it's him. It's a bad goal if that's Zach Hyman that backhands it or snaps it towards the net. No disrespect to Zach. I'll pick somebody else. If that's like the Galchenyuk goal, like he zipped it quick, but that's a bad goal. But like if Matthews does that, there's zip to it and there's a purpose. Like he fired it before Allen got set on the play. So a lot of times those are very tough. And Austin is better than anybody at creating deception with his shot, because you can't read it coming off.
And I would say, to your question earlier about, like, you know, to talk about their significance like that, isn't it cool that the other players in the league, they just know these guys are the best at what they do. Like, there isn't a question about them. Like, is there a better goal scorer this year than Matthews? The answer is no. Is there a better point producer player than McDavid this year, more dangerous player? The answer is no. They're doing things that other players in the game just can't do.
And I think it would happen in any division, because you're seeing a lot of haters out there that are, you know, fans of the Bruins or fans of the Flyers or the Avalanche or the Kings, and they're like, well, it's only because it's the North Division. And I saw someone on Twitter, let me find it here, some guy who pumps out a bunch of analytics stuff, Jay Fresh Hockey on Twitter. Yeah, I know, but he makes a very good point here, and this is just statistical. Number of goals per game. In the East, it's 2.94. These are teams on average. In the Central, 2.82. The North, 2.91. The West, 2.89. Number of goals per game allowed by the two worst teams in each division. So in the North, the two worst teams give up 3.3 per game. In the East, the two worst give up 3.5. In the West, the two worst give up 3.3. The Central, the two worst give up 3.1. In other words, every division has bad teams. Every division gives up about the same amount of goals, scores about the same amount of goals. Like, it's very even. And these two guys are just doing something that no one else is doing. And can you find, a player here or there where you're like, wow, look what this guy's doing because of repetition? Maybe. But for the most part, it's pretty balanced throughout the year and throughout the league. And these two guys are just doing something that is remarkable. And trying to place an asterisk on it, in my opinion, is just being a hater for the sake of hating. Go ahead if you want to, but why would you not appreciate what Connor McDavid and Austin Matthews are doing? It's not like these two guys were nobodies last year, never heard of them before. Like, it's the best player in the world and another guy who was a top five player in the world coming in anyway that are doing this.
Well, you can place an asterisk on it if you want. Like, the whole year has got a, you know, is going to always be looked at as a different season, right? This is the year they played with no fans. Just like last year's Stanley Cup will be, that's the year they played in the bubble. The fact is, it's the same for everybody. Somebody else could go along and do this too if it were easy. Why aren't they doing it? If it's so easy to score 40 goals, those teams that are players in those divisions that the worst teams give up 3.3 and 3.1 goals a game, why don't they score 40 goals? Why don't they get 100 points?
Exactly.
Because they can't.
No, they can't.
Because they can't. You know what? We were all capable of getting 215 points like Gretz. We just didn't. It's because we weren't good enough. Yes, they were. Yes, they were great teams, and they beat the crap out of everybody. But there's a reason why he was able to get 215 points. How come somebody else on the Oilers didn't do it? Because they weren't good enough, meaning they weren't as good as Gretz. So the people that want to kick McDavid and Matthews in the shins because they're from other divisions, and it's a lazy narrative, because most of that narrative came early in the year when the North Division was scoring at a crazy rate. Remember at the start, Montreal, they just beat the hell out of Vancouver for about 3 weeks in a row. And that changed because there wasn't very many games. That changed the goals per game. And so it was something early. But it's not anymore. The divisions are pretty much the same. It's pretty close, goals per game.
You know what I kept thinking about? And this has nothing to do with, like, I feel like Austin Matthews has been robbed a little bit. Because, like, last year he had 47. And then the pandemic hits. Like, he didn't get to 50, right? But he's on pace for 60. This year, he gets 40, which is really 65 or whatever. But in the record books, who is it for the Leafs? It's like Vive, Lehman,
and Andrejczyk, yeah.
But which is, I mean, and I know, like, again, era adjusted, you know, games, goals per game, all of that. But it's like, I mean, if they get 82 and he's healthy next year, he gets it. But it's just, he's been kind of robbed 2 years in a row here of that
magical number. Hitting 50 is a magical number.
It's a prestigious stat here in Toronto for this organization, considering it's been around 100 years and only three people have done it, which is still blows my mind. It still blows
well,
my mind.
Well, you know what it means, though? Like, look at how happy everybody was when Matthews scored his 40th.
Right.
Like, the players, that are around, they understand the significance of that 40th goal. Two nights ago, Leon Draisaitl did an interview. I happened to see it against the Canucks. It was between periods. And he was asked about, McDavid getting to 100 points. And he said, look, he doesn't talk about it, but we want him to get 100 points. Like, to them, it matters. The players know. The media are going to always protect the players that play in their city. They do it all the time. You see, this rotten guy from another team ran our good player. Yet if it's the other way around, it just gets brushed aside. It happens all over the place. The unbiased media look doesn't happen all the time anymore. That's just the way it is. And so the people that are ragging on McDavid or ragging on Matthews, it's because the players in their city, they don't feel are getting enough run. But I think the two players are amazing. I love watching them play. I love watching David Pastrnak play. Like, those are my favorite players to watch because they do exciting things with the puck.
Exactly. And we're going to see them all continue to roll, right? Like, we're closing in on playoff time, and everyone's going to get the attention I think they all deserve. But when you're talking about history, like, you look at a guy like Jack Campbell, and I was thinking more about him earlier today. His record this year is 16-2-2. And I don't know if that gets enough attention, which this
no
is
kidding, man.
A city that talks about everything from every possible angle, and we're at the forefront of all that. And meanwhile, there's a goalie here that has a record of 16-2-2 with a 9.4.
Think about that. Think about that record, and there was like a spot of trouble in there where people are like, ah!
Yes. Sheldon Keefe said it. Sheldon Keefe went on the mic and goes, "Got to get a save."
Yeah. Ray, if you could look into the Ray crystal ball, just look into the future right now. I know this is not your forte. Early prediction for the final four teams left.
Vegas.
Wow.
Jeez, man. I don't know. Tampa?
Yep.
Although Carolina scares me. I think Carolina's really good.
They are really good.
I saw a segment with Mike Kelly yesterday. Apparently, from an analytics standpoint, they have been the best team this year.
What the hell does that even mean?
Well, I'm talking about like the way that they play and the way that it translates to playoff hockey, where it's dump and chase and grind it out. Like, in all of their metrics, they're like first. Puck recovery, all these, like, it was a really cool segment.
Okay, let's see how they make out in the playoffs then.
That's, and then your, I'll say,
if they dummy everyone, I'll say you're onto something. Ray, other two teams.
Really, you don't like the
expected playoff success?
Apparently, does not buy it. No. But I'm going to take Tampa because the reason is because they're going to get Kucherov back, and I think that makes that changes Tampa from, you know, where they are right now. I would have never said this before, but I'm going to take Pittsburgh in the East. I keep overlooking them, and then I look and I'm like, they got 35 or 36 wins. They did most of it without Malkin. Like, he's not going to hurt them when he come, you know, when he gets back up to speed. And then I think Toronto will win the North. I fought that all year, and I'm not going to change now.
Yeah, it's this. I do think this year is going to be the most difficult year to try to project, especially once you get to the Final Four. Like, let's say that is
going to be
a
lot of fun. It's going to be a fun ride, Hazy B.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. All right, buddy. Well, have a great weekend out there. I'm sure you're teeing it up a couple of times, so think of us.
Oh, no, it's Mother's Day on Sunday.
Oh, that's right.
Mother's Day is a great day to play golf.
No,
it is. You tee it up at 6, and you get home by 9 for bed and breakfast.
It's the emptiest tee sheet.
Yeah, that'd be great. I could just see, hey, Cam, I'll see you about 11. The kids said they're going to look after your breakfast.
Ugh.
It's a bowl of cereal, spilt milk, and whatever the hell else they put on a tray.
Yep. Last day of the year. The last day possible you can golf is that morning anyway. Maybe you sneak in 9 in the afternoon. Maybe.
No,
I will say that's going to be a tough sell around
that's
here.
That's a tough sell. Yeah.
The chances of the golf clubs coming out this weekend are pretty slim.
Okay. So, well, we'll revisit it on Monday. We'll see where you're at. And
happy Mother's Day to everybody, and we'll talk to you guys Monday.
All right, buddy. There's Ray Ferraro, our TSN hockey analyst, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. They take away the fears of buying a pre-owned vehicle by sharing service history, lien history, and accident history. Find out more at MapleToyota.com. James Duthie in just over half an hour. Jeff Blum down in Houston teeing up Jays Astros tonight. George Springer is on the road with the team. He's in Houston addressing the media. We'll try to hear from him a little bit more. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 4. So a couple of big anniversaries in the sports world today in terms of audio that we have referenced over the years or played over the years. We used to talk about Bartolo Colon all the time.
Every day.
Like, all the time Bartolo Colon was in the crosshairs, and we were referencing him. We went down to the Dome to watch him when they were in town. I think he was with the Mets at that point.
He was awesome.
And it was awesome, right? Just seeing him strut around. He's so slow walking back and forth from the dugout and the mound. And Jays won that game, if I can recall. And that was fun, man. That was, I guess we should have taken more advantage of that because we had the ability to go to the ball game and see Bartolo Colon.
That seems like, by the way, it was 10 years ago.
A lifetime ago.
It was a long time ago. A long, long time ago. Because I want to say it would have been at least 5 years ago. We might have been still doing the lunch at that point when we went down to see him. And it was 5 years ago tonight when he was in San Diego and he hit the bomb heard around the world. Remember he hit that
monster bomb. It was like top shelf into that building.
Yeah, he hit it to left. He turned on it, man. Like, he got something behind him. And we've been playing the Faldo, Harry Higgs call multiple times today. And I believe this was the Mets broadcast. When they called it, when they saw it, when they witnessed this live, I will say the energy was perfect, right? Like, this deserved the high energy. It deserved the appropriate amount of attention because Bartolo Colon, who was truly one of the worst batters in the history of Major League Baseball, connected and went deep. And this is what went down 5 years ago tonight.
Colon looking for his first hit of the year. He drives one deep left field. That goes Upton back near the wall. It's out of here. Bartolo has done it. The impossible has happened.
Unreal.
Outrageous.
Unreal.
Outrageous.
Yeah, Bartolo Colon. How, like, looking for his first hit of the year is the preamble. And
right.
I wouldn't say he necessarily turned on that thing like George Springer did last Saturday night or Shohei Ohtani did last night, but it was enough to get out, and that's all that matters.
What about your boy? Is this like leading into your boy hitting one last night?
What are you talking about?
Danny Jansen?
Oh, Jansen. No, you're trying to connect Danny Jansen hitting a home run to Bartolo Colon hitting a home run? No,
well, I know that you and I both have complained a lot about the hitting when he steps up to the plate. I think he went long. Yeah, he went deep last night.
Man, they put up a ton of runs on the board the last two games in Oakland. They were on, it was on while we were on the air, so it's kind of tough to track what was going on.
I'm sure he did because I'm 100% sure I watched it.
Yeah,
like,
no, he hit one last night.
We were talking while he hammered it.
He's starting to connect a little bit more. But I was not connecting the dots of Bartolo Colon hitting a home run to Danny Jansen.
I thought that was your lead-in. You're like, I couldn't believe this guy hit a homer, and I thought you were going to show the Danny Jansen homer.
No, I wasn't. I don't think we have the rights to show or play any Blue Jay audio based on the way things work.
Yeah, that would make sense.
Right,
yeah,
Bartolo is just... He's a storyline on his own.
That's just what I was bringing up was Bartolo Colon. I didn't think I had to segue it into anything else. I mean, I thought you guys would be excited to hear from Bartolo Colon. But
I'm just sad that you brought up the fact you were like, do you remember? I remember vividly because you guys know I'm not the biggest, you know, outdoor person going to a game, all that type of stuff. And I loved that afternoon. I think we had beers flowing. We had popcorn.
We had good seats.
Good seats.
Yeah, it was cool. It was cool to be down there just to see Bartolo Colon strut, man. Like, he's a guy who won a Cy Young. And he had a great career, Bartolo Colon. Like, and he was a throwback. He was not a guy that threw heat. Never threw heat, man. He'd hit 88, 89 on the gun. He might gear up and hit 91 or 92.
Hell of a career, man, if you go through his numbers and seasons. He still posts videos of him. He's, like, working out, and I don't know what the hell he's doing, but it's almost like he threatens he's coming back again, and it's just
not
happening.
Always posting those teasers. Like, if you need me, I'm here, and I'm trying to keep my arm strong, and he's always stretching his arm out.
I love it.
But it's not going to happen now. I mean,
I love it. We've seen the teasers of him going up against kids and blowing it by them and stuff. Like, I think he's one of those guys who's so funny, just enjoys life.
Yeah.
And
he's one of a kind. He's one of a kind, Bartolo Colon. It's not going
to
happen. But, yeah, I saw it earlier today. I'm like, we got to play that at some point, is Bartolo Colon. So it wasn't linking anything in particular to anyone else. It was just showing Bartolo the respect I think he deserves for hitting a home run 5 years ago today, which is truly one of the shocking moments of sports, really, in the last 5 years, 10 years for sure. But, the Jays are in Houston tonight. I'm sure the Astros are happy to be back home and not be on the road anymore because, you know, we talked a lot about that the last couple of days, them being in the Bronx and you know, Yankee fans kind of turning on them, and that's not going to slow down. It's not like the next time they go to New York, people are going to be cordial. They're going to take heat whenever they go, and it's going to happen. But It's a bummer that Springer can't play tonight because I'm sure that applies to people in Houston as well. I mean, he won the World Series MVP. He was hitting leadoff there for years, and he was as much of the core as anyone, you know, in terms of a guy drafted, developed, came up, played a prominent position in center field, hit the prominent position in terms of the leadoff spot, and now he's out and he can't go. And based on what I'm reading online, because I haven't been able to hear it yet, it does sound like he's going to really kind of shut it down. You know, he's sure he's doing rehab, and I'm sure he's going through different, options in terms of getting himself back to 100%, but he's not going to burn it. And he's probably quite some time away from returning.
Yeah.
And it's too bad. So,
it's disappointing, especially, Vladdy's a great story. But what else, outside of Vladdy, what's a great story for the Blue Jays so far this year, in your opinion?
Well, I think
Grichik's been a pretty good guy to keep around. I thought he was going to be the odd man out when they signed Springer just because of numbers and positioning. But he's been a pretty good utility guy to keep around, man.
Well, he's been more than that, absolutely. He's playing center field, right?
Like, yeah.
And that's a big part of it. They needed someone to step in there for Springer. And you're right, Grichik, his bat has been remained fairly hot. You know, like he's a guy that's going to be up and down at times. He goes into some ruts where he just strikes out.
Yeah.
Every time.
But then he'll go into five games in a row and he'll hit a dinger every game.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, Grichik has been a positive. Semien, once he got out of that leadoff spot, has come alive. You know, like he's hitting righties in particular pretty well. And Bichette's been pretty strong at the plate. Like, there's been positives here. Their bullpen has been incredibly solid. I mean, their numbers would suggest that. But they've had to work through a lot of injuries, and I think they've utilized their bullpen very well. So, there's positives here, and the fact that they're above 500 and they're in the race and we're into May, even dealing with these injuries, that's a good sign. So they're within pouncing
stuff to draw off of. I just, you know, every time, like, I guess I get frustrated, you know, the Springer situation where it's like, nah, you know, he's hurt, he's tired, all of that. Montoyo, like, it's not his fault, but I get growingly frustrated with him because it's like they just say, go out there and talk. And
he's in a tough spot. Tough spot, but he's the manager. He's got to speak. I don't think he does a very good job of coming off as someone who either knows the plan or is being genuine about what the plan is. And that's why I think it's important that Springer comes out and talks. And it's on him now. You know, it's it's on the medical team. It's on the manager. It's on the club. But ultimately, Springer's got to make sure he's at 100% because there cannot be another setback. You know, if you have to take a month, you take a month. If you're going to miss the next 25 games, so be it. But you can't come back, play for two games, and then miss another 25.
No. Nope.
So I think the ball is in George Springer's court now, and it's on him to make sure he's got it figured out. So Jay's in Houston tonight. We'll catch up with Jeff Blum, Astros analyst, around 6:25. Duffy's coming up in about 20 minutes as well. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. All right, James Duffy will join us in about 15 minutes, get his take on the Leafs-Habs last night, what's been going on in the NHL. I guess Tom Wilson was reaching out to Artemi Panarin, and I don't know what the details were on that exchange, but that seems to be the move in sports, where something crazy happens or someone gets injured.
Mm-hmm. There's always a facilitator, too. Like, I'm sure Alex Ovechkin would have been the mediator in that process, and he probably said, look, man, because you know Ovi loves his countrymen, and he loves Wilson. So there was probably both angles coming from it, and he probably said, look, man, you want to just give him a call? I don't know. I would guess that would probably be the avenue.
You could shoot. I mean, as you guys know, the league is so small. There's somebody that's played with somebody that's been friends with. Like, you can get a guy's digits right away. I mean, you can go on the players have a website and stuff that they can figure it all out. But ultimately, you know, if Tom Wilson felt bad, which I'm sure he did, you know, people may think he didn't feel bad, but I guarantee you he woke up the next day or whatever and felt bad. You can reach out. Doesn't mean Panarin is going to take his call. I've heard of scenarios where guy reaches out and is like, I'm not ready to talk yet.
Oh yeah, I've heard of that too. I mean, you guys are even closer than I am, but I think there's been some of those scenarios that have gone public where something really bad happened. Like some guy got, you know, flying elbow or whatever it was.
Right.
And the guy is in hospital or something. He's like, I'm not interested in taking your call right now.
Yeah, go to hell, man. Like, you know, you did that or whatever.
Which I don't blame them either, you know. Like, and the thing is, Panarin is not going to address Tom Wilson in the future. You know, this is not going to be a scenario where it's going to be Panarin who says, I'm going to drop the gloves with you to prove that you're not going to do that again. So it seems more reasonable that these two might connect, where we have seen that, you know, we've seen it in the past where guys are on the wrong side of a hit, even from a guy who might be, you know, a lot bigger, a lot tougher, whatever. And it's like, we're going to have a go and I'm going to be the one that goes with you, where that's not going to be the case here with Panarin. You know, he's not a fighter. No one would expect him to go out there and feel like he has to settle the score, so to speak.
No, but, absolutely.
You know, Wilson, I guess, did say he hopes it's over and it moves on. That ultimately is up to the Rangers. If they agree with that, if they're okay with that, I would think it probably is over based on what happened a couple of nights ago, and they're not going to play again each other or again until next year, I don't believe. So, you know, will it boil over? We'll find out.
I think it's over, you know, a little bit. I still think it'll be addressed at some point because – If the whole narrative is roster construction, I don't think they're blowing their team up and signing a bunch of mutants, but they are going to have somebody who is going to be able to handle that department.
If they don't acquire Ryan Reeves, Jamie, who the hell are they going to have on that roster that's going to deal with him?
Well, there are younger guys coming up. You know, I'm drawing a blank. Gabriel, he's 27 or 28, like Curtis Gabriel in San Jose. You know, there's a guy who, you know, by all accounts is not shy and fights all the heavyweights. Maybe he's available, his contract status. Like, there is going to be somebody on that team next year that is going to have a physical background.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's not going to be a first line. Like, the unique part, Tom Wilson's a unicorn because he plays on the top line. Like, he's a top six player. He's not a guy that plays 8 minutes and you can't trust on the ice. He's a good player. It's just that he's a monster. He's a big man who crosses the line, crosses the line. So
yeah, no, I suspect that the Rangers probably will. I mean, they have to be a little bit careful with how they're going to address it in terms of, you know, if you're going to sign some guys specifically for the four games you play Washington, then I'm not sure you could pull that off in the cap era. You know, I don't know if you can do that. In the league, I think they'll have an eye on it. Like, if you have some guy sitting in the minors and then he comes up for that game, it's like, all right, we know what's going on here. But if you can find someone who legitimately are going to play, and even if it's not every night, but, you know, it's going to give you 40 games next year and games that are not against the Washington Capitals, then I could see that being something they look towards. And if they do acquire that guy is not going to have to overthink it. You know, he will be there, quote-unquote, for a reason. Right. You know, where, like, you look at another team in New York, a guy like Matt Martin. Matt Martin would 100% fight Tom Wilson, 100%. Right. And if he were on the Rangers, it would have been him the other night. And if he were to sign with the Rangers this summer, it will be him next year. You know, like that type of a guy. There still are a few of them in the league, and I wouldn't be shocked at all if that's what they were thinking. And if he is there, then you're probably right. It's not over. I think the craziness off the draw is over, but I think Wilson might have to be prepared to drop the gloves again.
Agreed.
And that wouldn't shock him either. He's been around the block. He knows what's up. Final hour coming up. James Duffy will join us. And we'll get into the Jays in Houston taking on the Astros as well. Back into the Raptors game last night. They lost an OT. And a big one, Lakers in Portland tonight. That is the game of the night in the NBA. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app.
Alpine Credits.
Yes, it's your English teacher, Mrs. Nelson.
Uh-oh.
You've been using the word approved quite a lot lately.
True, but...
You know there are alternatives like accepted, authorized, confirmed, validated. Let's try. I own my home and would like a loan.
Acceptedated.
Alpine Credits, where homeowners get endorsed, confirmed, permitted, allowed, okayed, and approved. Some conditions apply. Alpine Credits.
FSRA license 12616.
This hour is brought to you by Alpine Credits. Do you own your home and need a loan? Alpine Credits can help. Visit alpinecredits.ca to learn more.